friends, if you heard or watched last week's episode, you know that we ended up turning that episode into two parts because we chatted for almost 2 hours about this case. This is the second half. If you aren't caught up, you will be confused unless you go back and listen to episode 144, Spirit Junkies, A Practical Twofer, Part 1. If you're all caught up, let's continue. We are picking up right after we finish talking about the first segment we like to call The Setup, where Steve meets the clients and finds out what's going on. Now we're moving into section 2, Digging True, where Steve digs deep in the investigation. Enjoy.
That's what happens.
Yep.
When you have a Ouija board, like, you open yourself up to anything.
And I will say, I think that first part of the show was really fascinating and interesting. The next part gets really heavy, and I'd like to just hit the top points and not go too deep into any of them, because they're all
dark.
I think are connected to that demon child's thing, whatever it is.
All these things that
all these things
did.
That come in, because they're all domestic violence related. They are all familial issues. Yeah. So I just kind of want to give a quick.
Yeah, you just pick out what you think we need to go. I don't think we made a lot of jokes in this section, so
no, it's too hard.
Go ahead and
horrible.
So the first one. Yep. So the first one, we meet a local historian, and of course, Steve gives us, it's a tragic story, and it is. It's
awful.
It's terrible. It is a
trigger warning for child death.
Yeah,
child murder and suicide here. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and for the whole rest of it, we've got domestic violence through the next probably 5 to 10 minutes. So, well, first we hear James McAndrews, who's a local historian. He talks about how this was it wasn't a funeral home until 1995. We don't really know what it is about it before, but it's a reverend that bought the property and made it into a funeral home and crematorium. Mm-hmm. So it's that for 15 to 20 years. And of course, there's, a lot of people came through these doors, both alive and dead. That wasn't even a Steve joke.
No.
That was it.
that was low-hanging fruit.
That was the local historian.
That was low-hanging fruit, my guy.
So this is the part that's going to get rough here. I don't even want to name the man.
I don't even remember his name.
But
no, I don't want to know.
He's a 51-year-old local track coach, which, you know, kind of gives the pillar to killer vibes, right? It's he seems to be a stand-up man, but he and his wife were going through a divorce, and they had a 10-year-old son named Hassan, and kind of giving that whole aspect, if I can't have him, nobody can have him.
Yeah.
A local security guard finds vehicle in the local peach orchard. The car is parked a certain strange way. They find the father in the front seat who had died by suicide. They find the son in the back seat. And
shot.
I would venture that in taking him to a place where it was a nice to look at kind of place. We've seen things like this before in true crime. Hey, what's that over there? So the kid doesn't see it coming, you know, and the...
I hate this.
The good conscious kind of thing. So that, and then both bodies were at the funeral home. And I believe the son had his funeral was at that funeral home.
They just kick the dad into a hole. Just dig a hole and kick him into it.
Don't
put him in a box. Don't even waste the wood on him.
There's probably local places that, you know, zoos or something.
Yeah. Oh, good. Test him first to make sure he doesn't have any communicable diseases. Yeah. But
yep.
Just sick. Just fucking the little boy. A boy.
So
hopefully the little boy didn't even know what was happening.
That's what I believe is that
he was there 1 minute and not the next. That's my guess.
I'm going with.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of ways that they figure with this is, if they don't see it coming, they don't know what happened, so therefore they can't hate me in the afterlife. So Hassan was the 10-year-old. This was 2011. So we will only say his name. We will not say his father's name.
Nope.
So this is where Amy starts finding this child demon. And of course, it's after we're hearing about a child. But then she's like, this is not a child. It is in fact a demon. It is something that is just, it loves the chaos. It's a shapeshifter. It likes it likes to feed off the anger, which there's probably is a lot of anger that goes through in a funeral home. Yeah. It's part of the steps of grief. Right. Why did you leave me? I can't believe you. Yep. You know, we were supposed to be here through life together, those kinds of things.
Anger at a man who kills his son.
Right. Yeah.
The mom, I'm sure. I mean,
oh, can you imagine the mom? She's got all those emotions, the grief and the sadness and the anger and the revenge feeling, probably.
I'll stick with dogs.
Yeah.
I will say that the next one, I find this a little funny because Steve's like, I get a call from a local author. Like, sure, you just got a call out of the blue. David Kolchek is what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, that sounds right.
We don't have an L name.
Jerry Garcia.
Z-Y.
Yeah. Just being that we have a lot of Scandinavian and other kind of names like that. That's what I went with. He tells us a story of, I don't like that he calls this guy the victim. Yeah, he's the guy who ends up dead at the end, but he's not a victim.
Not a victim.
But he's a murderer.
Yeah. So
he's not a victim. He tried to be a murderer.
The man's name is Harry Terry. He is called Terrible Terry.
His parents kind of did him dirty with that one.
Yeah. Like, well, he was born in the late 1800s.
I know.
So, because he was a 45-year-old farm laborer in 1931, Modesto, California. Yeah. He's also not a white man.
Right.
He had a rap sheet. He did 3 terms in Folsom Prison.
Steve asks, what was he in prison for? Do we have any idea?
Nope.
Steve, do you think they're not going to have any record of why he was in prison?
Somebody putting just dumb questions out there for Steve to have to deal with.
It's like the question when he's like, and we talk about this every episode, but it's like, did anybody die in this town?
Yeah.
No.
Sometimes the questions just come out funny.
Lake Michigan one was
that was Erie. That was the best one. That was the best.
That was a good one.
Nope, they all live, Steve. It's weird.
Yep. Well, he was in prison for attempted murder each time.
Oh my God!
And then
why
he gets
was
back
he out?
Out? Yeah, well, because it's 1931. It's also Great Depression time, so you know there's limited supplies and that sort of thing. Probably the last time he was in prison was for assaulting his wife Clara.
Cool.
So Steve names him Mr. Happy and
how did
asks
Mr. Happy
how he
here become a victim.
Yeah, again, not a victim.
Steve,
perpetrator.
No, he's not a victim.
Perpetrator and then gets caught kind of thing. So is October in 1931. It just seems like nothing. I will say that the script where it was translating invaded her over to
I
eat
didn't
some
even
fresh.
Catch that.
Changes so, the whole meaning of the
yeah, story. Yeah, it sure does. Yeah.
So a friend of the wife of Clara asked her to come over and shared some strawberries with her. And Harry went ballistic, threatened to cut her damn throat. She goes to the police station and says her husband wants to kill her while Terry's running around looking for her. Like, I just picture him running and like checking under rocks and in a log. And,
up in a tree, like, you up there, Clara?
Well, her brother is out on the town as well. Words are exchanged, knives are pulled out, and Philip Cowick, Clara's brother, drives a knife straight into Terry's chest. And he's dead before he hits the ground, which at this point, good riddance.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye.
And so Steve asks, how far from my client's property was this? And it's a legit smaller number. It's 500 feet. It's not like where they were like, oh, it's 2,700 feet away.
Yeah.
17,000 feet away. It was actually in the next town over. We're just really grasping at straws.
But we're using feet to make it sound like it's right there.
It sound like it's closer.
Yeah.
So this is less than like it's a little over a football field. Away. So Steve's like, so I got to assume they arrest Philip. Yes, Philip's arrested, confessed to it, and jury deliberates for 11 minutes and comes back with a not guilty.
Good.
As they were
should.
Like, thank you for taking that piece of trash out.
And then as the author, David Kolchek, says, Modesto is a safer place after Harry Terry died. Mm-hmm. Oh, without a doubt, Steve says.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was like, oh my God, no, we'll miss him.
Yeah.
He was such a good guy.
And it is interesting because, again, we hear this whole story and we hear the story about Hassan. Neither seem to connect to anything of the activity that we're finding out about.
Mm-mm.
I think that to me, what it seems like is that it's just to show that this demon child's thing is manifesting or building off of the anger around and is able to influence
people. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
One thing I want to mention that was in the haunting is that I thought was fascinating. Megan, you alluded to this earlier, that when the former coworker of the crematorium came to meet Dana at the shop and introduced himself, and he says that when he worked there and it was the funeral parlor crematorium, mm-hmm. they had a partnership with the local prison.
Yeah.
And so all of the prisoners who passed ended up there.
Because Dana asks about, they're like, we're in the embalming room and there's no drain.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that about? And that's when the man was like, well, it drained into the prison and the prisoners didn't mind that. And she's like, the prisoners? And he goes, yeah, we shared it with the... So I also thought it was interesting that Steve didn't bring that up. Or maybe he did in his research.
So was this, there was also a jailhouse connected to this?
I didn't get that part. I remember the guy saying that when she said there's no drain in here, and he said we had a long hose and we had to drain it into the bathroom sink.
Ew.
But then he did mention about...
Maybe I misunderstood it.
I don't remember him saying anything about the prisoners being there.
I was only partially paying attention because I didn't want to get scared.
Okay. I think he maybe made
the truth comes out.
But yeah, he said that they had to drain it in the next room over, which was the bathroom.
Okay, that
which is where, who was sitting on the toity when the
Michelle.
So maybe she, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a good connection, like, Amy, that I didn't make.
Feel like there's got to be with embalming and that sort of stuff and what actually goes on, you can't just flush that down a regular drain.
No.
Gross.
No. I wouldn't think so. No.
I don't think that's code. See, not food grade.
Not food code. It's certainly not food grade.
For sure.
For sure.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. So, little levity before we go on to our last case
here. Because
it's
really bad here, you guys. Yep.
So the last one I'll go through quick is Claire Booth, who's a local journalist, and she brings us back to 1910, mm-hmm. where we hear about a married couple, Andrew and Marie Sorensen. He's a prominent local businessman. He was 30 years old. He built a successful string of shops. He was really well known and respected.
Blah, blah, blah.
1909, Marie starts managing the Mace Hotel, which I don't know if the Mace Hotel used to be right on this property or near this property. I don't think we really quite get a... Maybe we do later on. I can't remember. But she's doing really well managing it. And now Andrew joins her in 1910. They buy the hotel. Steve goes, so they're rich. They seem happy. But when did things go wrong? Like, just because people are rich doesn't mean they're happy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure if I was rich, I would be happy. I would at least try really hard.
Can somebody give me $1 million and
let me test it out.
Let's
for
test
a while.
It
for yep. research.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. I would get back selflessly volunteering.
Yep.
Okay. I volunteer as tribute.
As tribute, selfless. For I want to figure this out.
So we find that it's about 4 years into their marriage. So they got married around 1906. When this incident unfortunately occurs and Andrew snaps from, mm-hmm. they said it is Friday, December 30th of 1910, not 2010,
not 2010, 1910.
Started off as a normal day, running errands. Marie was working, changing over the rooms, and Andrew came back a completely different person, insane with rage. He grabbed a 12-inch butcher knife, which, by the way, I had to look up because we often think of, like, I think of butcher knife as like the big meat cleaver.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But I think of it as a pointy one.
But and when I look at it, when you look them up, it doesn't really give a clear indication. But it's not usually the one with the big pointed tip. That's like a chef's knife.
I did a Google search and I pasted it in. What happened?
Oh, I did a Google search too, and I got meat cleaver.
The cleaver that you talk about, which mm-hmm. looks like, you know,
the square like block. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there were a couple really pointy ones, too.
Yep.
That were still called butcher knives.
Mm-hmm. But usually, because butcher, because it's usually breaking through bone and that sort of stuff. So it's going to have a little bit more heft to it. But nonetheless, he grabs
the knives that I see, I'm sorry, look kind of like pirate swords when they have like a pointy triangle thing. It doesn't come right to a tip. It's like a zoop, zoop. I don't know how much more clear I could be.
Basically, he grabs a foot long sword, and he searches until he finds Marie and attacks her. You can assume what he's doing with a knife. She has been hacked and stabbed all over her torso, her head, and one of her fingers has been cut off, likely from trying to catch the blade. Or trying
or
to catch the
defensive wound.
Yes, which is a defensive. She's trying to block. Mm-hmm. And then we get that Andrew flees, locks himself in his own bedroom. When the police get there, and this is where I'm like, who called the police?
Yeah,
like
probably Clara.
She might have.
I mean,
she survived.
Is that her? Was that
no?
Her
this
name?
Is Marie.
Marie. Probably Marie.
Well, I know she survives, but it's also 1910, so somebody likely ran
but
to
rich and happy.
Right.
Maybe they made a ruckus and the neighbors called.
Well, and that's, I'm guessing that it's more likely somebody else was in the hotel and sprinted down to the police station.
Probably.
Yeah. And not, because, again, 1910 phones are a thing, but they're not in everywhere.
Yeah. But they're rich.
They
Don't
are.
Forget. They're rich.
They are.
And happy.
But if you watch 1923, you see the boards, and that's 13 years later of all the switchboards of having to move things along. And that would mean also that both places would have to have a phone. Anyways, so Marie does survive. Cops have to break in. They find that Andrew has nearly decapitated himself.
Yeah. Which, what a terrible way to die.
Yeah.
Truly, he's not in his right mind of thing. And then, then it gets into, does all of a sudden he realize what he did and now he's like mortified by himself? I can't live with myself kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or is he still in that psychotic break? Mm-hmm. Whatever.
And
one thing we know is that is a sharp knife.
That is not a dull knife. He had to have been out of his mind, because if you were in your mind, you would stop. How could you continually inflict pain like that? Mm-hmm. And if you're almost decapitated, we're not just talking a little slit. We're
Well, I mean, I don't think he was doing it just as a quick. It was a forceful.
Gross.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So Amy comes in and starts talking about the tall man. So again, now we're thinking, is the tall man associated with Andrew Sorensen? That's his name. God, mm-hmm. We're so good with names today,
you
guys.
We're great.
But anyways, and Amy's having a problem. He lived here, but he is really confused. 1850s, 1950s, 1930s. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really know. Mm-hmm. And she said, were you still alive? And he got all jumbled up. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds like he doesn't know, he doesn't know he's dead. And I think, Amy, you mentioned maybe that, we had another suicide recently that was like that. But I wonder if you were thinking of the guy who died by stroke, who Amy thought had died by suicide, but she was like, most people who die by suicide know they died by suicide.
Yeah.
And I
was thinking of one that really was, because I remember saying, well, he died. He did this to himself. How can he not remember that or not believe that he's dead? But it was, I don't know, maybe four episodes ago.
Yeah, because I was thinking about the one with the girl that had the lamp and her dad passed away years later, but he had a stroke.
Oh, yeah,
first.
That was just two episodes ago. Yeah.
And it does, bring the question, if people die by suicide and then in the afterlife they don't know they're dead, it kind of leads credence to the fact that they weren't in their right mind when they did it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, our local journalist, Claire, continues to tell us that Marie survives. She's somehow miraculously. We never find out how many wounds she actually has.
Probably
but
not.
She's told that her husband did die. Mm-hmm. But they didn't tell her until the next day because they didn't want to send her through shock, which is actually really considerate. Yeah. She does live and recover physically, but they don't give us anything more after her as to what's going on.
Yeah, I hope she was okay mentally. Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah. Probably a lot of PTSD, and that wasn't a thing back then.
They didn't have trauma therapy back then.
No.
They didn't even believe in it.
No, but they did have whiskey.
Well, that's all you need.
Right?
That's everything's fine.
All you need is whiskey.
Amy does say that she sees a crying woman, and she mentioned a crying woman earlier, like her face has been smashed in and her left arm, feel like she was murdered, so probably is connected to Marie, but we never hear about this one again either.
No. Yeah.
Like, we just, that's probably the best connection, mm-hmm. and we don't hear about it in the reveal. I'm sure they talk about it, but because that's not one of the, it's not one of the sketches that she drew.
Right. Well, and maybe it's somebody else, because Marie wasn't murdered.
No, but she did.
She did have all of those injuries, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. It could
Where you could say she felt like she was, or part of her died yeah. that day.
Yeah.
I mean, in A Haunting, they do talk about a girl, Angie,
yeah.
who was a sex worker who had an abortion mm-hmm. and a back alley abortion, and she died from that. So mm-hmm. she, I mean, maybe it was her that she
what
saw.
What was the property yeah. before it became a funeral home?
I don't know.
That's what I need to.
Angie said that she was locked in a closet and repeatedly raped over and over again mm-hmm. as a sex worker, and then she got pregnant. So maybe that could be Angie, because I'm sure... Mm-hmm. If she was locked in a closet and raped, they probably were beating her.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. She's the one that the daughter talked to.
Communicated
and that,
with,
then
yeah.
she got the scratch when the mm-hmm. man who was beating her spirit mm-hmm. came in. Mm-hmm. And that's when they scratched the daughter's hand.
Got it.
I will say the TV, with Amy on the TV, it reminds me of the Big Bang Theory when Sheldon put his face on a TV and was like going everywhere. Because uh-huh. he was like, I can't risk my mind dying. I have to stay in my room and be safe.
Yep. Yeah, I know exactly which episode you're talking about.
Thank you for listening. The Activity Continues. We'll be back after this short break. Hi, friends. Do us and yourselves a favor and check out our affiliate, Three Spirit Drinks. They create plant-based, non-alcoholic elixirs that are cruelty-free and vegan. And they are designed to give you some of the benefits of alcohol without the hangover and other side effects. If you're looking to cut down on alcohol but still want the buzz, check them out. The link is us.threespiritdrinks.com and use the promo code THEACTIVITYCONTINUES for 15% off your entire order. Hi everyone, Amy here. As you may have heard, since the ad's been running for about 3 weeks now, I have another podcast. It's called Volsteadland, and it's mainly about a Minneapolis mobster from the 1930s called Kid Can. Well, there's a new book out about him right now, and it is so good. And the book is called Minnesota's Most Notorious Mobster, The Making and Breaking of Kid Can by author Ron DeBlew. I'm telling you this because you can get it on Audible if you go to theactivitycontinues.com/audible. You can get a 30-day free trial by using our link there. That's plenty of time to read this amazing book. And when you get the book, check out page 6 in the acknowledgement section, and you might just see a name you recognize. Spoiler alert, it's me. Anyway, check it out. If you're interested in true crime and ghosts of the past, you will enjoy this story. Theactivitycontinues.com/audible to start your free trial. And the book is called Minnesota's Most Notorious Mobster, The Making and Breaking of Kid Can.
Yeah.
But so we head to Amy in the sketch. She comes up with two sketches for us. Mm-hmm. And we have the classic, is this what you saw? Yes, this is what I saw. And in the reveal, we are in COVID. So Amy is on a monitor, as Megan mentioned, next to Steve. She's in another room of the house. However, they are meeting at Dana's house and not at the location itself, because Amy said that this was one of the most draining walks mm-hmm. I've ever done, and stressful walks, probably in the last 10 years. One of the reasons for that is there's an excessive amount of residual energy.
Yeah.
Immense amount of hearing people walking back and forth, people talking the energy there is extremely thick. And she's worried about anybody being exposed there for too long on a consistent basis would become lethargic. Does this win them an award for being the most stressful walk that she's done in the last 10 years? So Dana shares, you know, that there's mood changes, and Ava chimes in that there's overwhelming sadness. Steve's like, oh yeah, by the way, this is was a funeral home with a crematorium. And Amy's just kind of like, okay.
Very interesting.
And that's where she pulls out and says, yeah, I heard witches gathering in black masses during my walk. And Amy, would you like to say what Michelle was doing during this time?
She was doing her best, looking around like, I have no idea where you got
who?
That. What?
Me? Me?
No?
What?
I don't even know what that means.
What is a seance, you said? I have never heard of that word.
EVP? What is EVP?
Like dolphins? I have never heard of that. Uh-huh. That's weird. Have you heard of this? No.
And Amy just kind of keeps talking and talks about like the residual energy could be dangerous for living and dead. And Steve's like, you know what this might mean, right, guys? And he's like, yeah, they've been letting paranormal groups in, EVPs, Ouija boards. And there's definitely a difference because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we did the William Spots Museum episode where they were very like, we're doing historical and ghost walks.
Yeah.
And Amy didn't have much of a reaction to it then. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, okay, you guys are just doing it as respectful. Mm-hmm. And there was maybe more that was cut out of here before we get Amy's reaction, but we do get a very strong
which isn't even the strongest reaction she's ever had to somebody doing the Ouija board. I was shocked that she was not more angry.
Well, she hadn't had all the information yet. You know, she still had more questions for them. How do you do this? And are you respectful? And all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like we were talking before, I feel like after she got all that information, she didn't seem that cheesed about it. Yeah. You know, she just said, be careful.
I think it was more the stern, like, you don't know what you're messing with. Like, fine if you want to do these things as long as you're doing whatever. But I think her response is specifically more to the Ouija board aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we get Ava says, oh, I enjoy talking to them because we get intelligence responses. And Steve kind of, you know, throws fuel on the fire here. And Amy just is like, yeah, I talk to the dead. Just be aware who you're really talking to. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. You know, it wasn't like, yeah, you just need to be careful of who you're talking to. It was a stern warning.
Yeah.
And then Michelle's like, yeah. And I'm like, you don't fucking know, Michelle.
And then Amy's like, yeah, Michelle's like, right. And Amy just says, there's a lot of shit going on over there. And Ava,
we know we're stirring it.
And then that's when Amy starts talking about the little boy and goes right into a demon. And again, Amy... L here, I think you had a great
observation. When she says she's talking about the little boy and they show Steve and he's like scribbling in his notebook. And then she says, that's when I realized it wasn't a little boy at all. And I just see Steve going, just crossing it off. We don't see him do that. That was in my mind.
Yeah. And so she's just kind of describing this demon thing and thinks that it's able to influence people to fight, to shoot another person. It likes to start to influence people. Feels like it's starting to do that here. And Steve's like, does anybody feel on the brink? And Michelle and Ava are both like, no. And Dana's like, I do sometimes.
Yeah.
Which again, if I was her employee, I'd be like, maybe I should knock my shit off.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
But like again,
off.
You know, Dana's the owner. She has a lot more stress on her. She's got a, you know, so it makes sense that she would feel that way.
For sure.
And then you've got Ava and Michelle who just there to do fucking EVPs.
Plus,
and
I think Dana is probably more sensitive, like more sensitive because she and she says she's been sensing this stuff her whole life. I don't know if she said it in the Dead Vows, but she said it in the other show that
and
she has had.
And
her mom was sensitive. And so she has sensed things all of her life. And maybe the other ladies don't so much unless they're doing EVPs or.
Well, and I mean, she comes in and as I mentioned earlier with the love, light and respect, you know, and she states that in everything that I read to all the articles, it's a quote. And that's where there is a difference between like Dana and Michelle Ava. And it could, you know, things could have changed by this point. But just seems like you said, Dana's been around this for a long time where maybe the other two are like, oh, she can hear it. I want to do it too. And I want to do this. But again, innocent intention that can come back to bite them kind of literally.
And I will say, you know, when I was doing my stuff with Leah, she would say like, you know, just say only love, light and, you know, peace can enter here. And so maybe, you know, Dana's worked with somebody and has that training to know.
Versus,
more than likely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she really, I really feel like Dana has a, she knows what she knows, and she knows she has those gifts. And so she's, you know, in some way, shape, or form worked to understand them.
Yeah. Well, Steve decides to liken this neighborhood to Brooklyn in the 80s because there's so many murders in a 5-mile area. And it's like, okay, but you're talking about a decade. We're talking about decades.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that obviously went down, and I feel like we only hit the tip of the iceberg.
With- I got the impression that the area was not very, that it was a little dicey because of the beginning when they they show Dana sitting at her desk and she's watching the security camera and she sees Steve come up.
Yes. So one of the articles that I found, they had somebody broke in to the store and tried to take things.
Okay.
And I think that might have been a 2019.
I wonder if the spirits would protect the store.
Eh, I think they would do whatever they can to get attention.
Yeah.
Not going to go into covering any of the things that we already covered from history.
Just that Steve does call the little demon kid a rat bastard.
Yes. Yep. So our first picture that we have is after talking about the first story in history that we heard. Mm-hmm. It's connected to a child. But that, that drawing, that thing looks like Chucky.
It does.
A it's very terrifying. Creepy little child. Yes.
Like, and I hate Chucky how it's looking doll. At us.
Yeah, it's looking right
like,
at
it's
us.
It's like looking at us off the paper. Oh, I don't like it.
It's very creepy.
This is how I feel about dolls all the time.
Yeah.
And so everybody's kind of like, oh, that's ew, gross. I don't like it. Chills. Steve brings in, yeah, this is even more disturbing when you know you have kids. I'm like, I'm not sure how that really ties in, but okay, we just are throwing that in there to make sure that we know that Dana has three adopted children who were mentioned very briefly early on, but other than that, there hasn't been a lot. Amy talks about biggest concern being this tall, thin male. We are made to believe that it is Andrew Sorensen or their connections to everything. I'm not sure about it. It could be. We have heard that there are, you know, from Amy that spirits will take on another form or they'll present themselves a certain way. And he wants to be tall and menacing. But, you know, maybe because he died in the way that in his deranged state that just stayed through, like the good person that he apparently was is gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So Amy shows the next sketch of a man in a suit coming through the wall, it looks like.
Yeah, this sketch was really creepy. I have to say the artwork is very good.
The artwork is really fun in this one.
Yeah, very creepy.
Yeah, I was not a fan of either of these sketches.
Yeah. Well, I loved them. I thought they were really cool, but yeah, they're real creepy.
I will say the first one to me is creepier than this one.
Yeah, with that little fucking kid.
With the little kid, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like how Ava says, Dana should look at that one. I'm like, dude, she's sitting right next to you. I'm going to guess she's going to see it.
Calm down.
Yep. And they're all like, yeah, I've seen something like that. I'm a little freaked out. He's in the bathroom. He's in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Ava, you described a heavy presence. And I did one of the articles I read. They named one of the spirits like something like boots or something like that because they could hear heavy boots.
Oh,
on the stairs.
Right.
I think that was in that 209 article that
it
I
was because that's the one I read. Yep.
And, you know, Ava describes a little bit what she saw. And Steve's like, do you think it's this guy? Amy's, yeah. Dana's like, I am nauseous. So there's just a lot of feelings coming up right now. We talk about that he's got anger problems. Amy said he's put his arm around my waist every time he would touch me, like massive anxiety. And Dana acknowledges, yes, customers have been touched, things thrown, hairs pulled, butts touched.
Butts.
And
we had butts
Amy's
touched
like,
in the last one we did. The
we
one
did
Megan
have
and I
butts
did.
Touched.
Yep.
Put that on
and
your
Amy is,
ghostly grab ass.
Ooh, yeah, that was right. That was such a good one.
Amy is worried that this thing makes attachments too easily and can come home with them. And all of them are like, yeah, I've woken up or I've felt the presence. And Michelle's like, I know something came home with me and I just tell it to leave. And it's like, yet you don't want to stop what you're doing.
I know.
Girl, you brought some of this on. Like, not trying to victim blame or anything, no. But it's like you've said you want all these experiences and that you won't stop.
And then you're getting them and you're like, leave me alone. Which is it? You don't get both.
Right. Yes. And then Steve's like, is it possible he's going home with all three of them every night? And Amy's like, yeah, it's a possibility that, you know, this is something that, you know, people have a hard time with. He can be in multiple places simultaneously. So, you know, he's pissed.
Well, and plus, I mean, I think that should be, you know, pretty common. Like, spirits aren't bound by the same bodies that we are. So, like, they can be in different places at the same time.
I don't know. The show Ghosts tells me they can't.
I need to watch that.
It's so cute.
It is. But it makes me think of like in Flubber when they like pieces break off or
oh my god, that
or the blob or something like that, and then it all comes back together.
In 25 years, that is an old reference.
That is old.
That was a
good
movie.
But that's what I make it. What it or like what is it in Ghostbusters when the Michelin Man is
the marshmallow exploded.
Yeah,
the
marshmallow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Michelin tire marshmallow man, whatever. When he split into a bunch of little
marshmallow
things.
Marshmallow man. I've seen the movie 5 gazillion times.
Okay, but really? It's also the Michelin man in real life.
Fun fact, Jordan, when he was little, loved the Ghostbusters song. Loved it.
Yeah.
We played it nonstop on our ALEXA. Nonstop. Nice. He can now talk to ALEXA, by the way.
Oh,
okay. He asks her to play fart noises.
Oh, that one's funny, actually.
Just hope he doesn't order like 20 hamburgers or anything, because there are parents that have had deliveries.
Yeah. Sorry.
I do find it interesting that Ava says, I'm just a little overwhelmed right now. I didn't expect it like this. I don't even know how to put into words what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. What did you expect? Like, what if Amy would be like, oh my God, you guys, let's do EVPs together. Let's hold hands and skip through a field and do some EVPs, and then we'll sit down and do a Ouija board, and then we'll do a seance, and it'll be fun and games.
Mm-hmm. And then Steve says, all right, Amy, can they fix it? And Amy says, yeah, so first thing you need to do is remove the demon-like, childlike thing. You need specifically for this to be a holy person from a Christian-based religion to be able to counteract this kind of evil that he's creating. Once he's exorcised and removed, that a male medium needs to come in and first deal with the male in the suit so that he can be removed, then the removal of the residual energy. Then once you've done that, you all need to get this place clean from top to bottom. Try to make it a happy and as much of a positive experience as possible. Turn it into a whole overnight, you know, like a slumber party. I'm picturing practical magic and then making margaritas in the middle of the night as they're scrubbing the ash off the walls. And
I love that. Practical magic and margaritas. That's our title.
This will come to a shock as nobody, but practical magic scared me a little bit.
What?
When she gets possessed.
Casper scare you?
No, but they're never possessed. When she's like writhing on the bed and he comes out of her, holy shit.
I don't think I've seen Practical Magic.
What? It's so cute.
I don't think I've seen it. It's Sandra Bullock, isn't it?
Yeah, and Nicole Kidman and Stocker Channing.
I probably did see it at some point. It's very cute. Yeah.
It is really a cute movie. I really like it now, but the first time I saw it, it scared me. I'm brave in other ways.
Okay.
I had a baby.
That's brave. That is brave. That's braver than I was have been in that situation. Or not situation. Never mind.
I know where you're going. In that area.
I was not brave enough to have a child.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know how to transition, so I'm just going to go back to Steve said, wow, that's a lot of steps.
Yeah. That is a lot of steps.
And Dana's like, yeah, it is. Well, what are you thinking? And Dana says, this is my heart and soul. Remember, she said it's her dream job.
Right.
So they're going to do it. And Steve says, as far as them coming in the store doing EVPs, could they keep doing that? Or is that something you want them to stop? Well, for now, it'd be best to hold off because this thing is pissed. Mm-hmm. Like, she is just like, did you hear what I had to say for the last however many hours we've been sitting here?
And that happened in Haunting too. After the spiritual minister left, she said, "You guys can't do any of this shit. until everything calms down. And they waited, according to this, they waited several months before they started it up again.
Okay. Which then just makes you wonder, like, did he not go very far and just came back?
Came back, yep.
And Steve's like, so you too, you got to stop regardless? You didn't want to stop regardless, so what are you going to do now? And Michelle's like, no, 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 I'm going to listen. Sure, sure, Jan.
Yeah, I believe that.
And so, you know, everybody thanks her. Then we get 2 months later, we get a video of Dana at the shop and everybody for coming in. They've been working with mediums and holy people for Amy's advice room, the child demon and the tall man that was here, which makes you wonder, like, did some of them not work out? Because they have, it sounds like lots of mediums and holy people came through.
Yeah.
She says, I know there's still a lot of spirits here and there's always will be because it's being an old funeral home, but we're calm now, much calmer here. And again, I'm like, well, yeah, it was a funeral home, but are you talking about like the people that were dead or are you talking about the people's energy that's coming from coming through there? Because Amy kind of said, if you do these things, you should clean up the residual energy.
Right.
And she just said, it's lighter. I know my customers, employees are safe and my family's safe. So thank you. And that's that.
It was a good show.
So that was,
I liked that episode. It was good.
I really did too.
That was, and that was a long recap for us, but we kind of had a lot to say on this one.
We did.
And it wasn't even in the meat of the like discovery of what.
Right. Well, Steve and we were also talking about the other show they were on. So it's kind of a twofer.
We did a twofer.
Yeah.
Practical Magic twofer.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good
title. If you want to be scared, go watch A Haunting.
Yeah.
And Amy, they in Practical Magic, that's when they're making margaritas at midnight.
Oh, okay.
You that's why that. I did that.
Spoiler alert.
And then they
got it.
Okay. It was very fun until it started turning terrible because the whiskey that was left, or the tequila that was left by the guy whose spirit is possessing Nicole Kidman.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
I'll have to watch it.
It's very good movie. It's super, super good. Okay. And their hair, stunningly gorgeous.
Oh, nice.
It is. Oh, my God. I cannot get over their hair.
Nicole Kidman's always had amazing hair when it was curly. I like her better curly, of course, because I'm a curly girl.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you can't get much better than Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock. Like, stunning. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our episode.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody, or watching if you're watching. And
or both.
Glad you stuck around.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what we're going to do next time yet because of like whose turn it's supposed to be. I'm thinking that to get back in order, maybe we should just like roll dice or something.
Yes.
And or ask Janet.
A-L-E-X-A.
Yeah. So we'll let you know.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Activity Continues podcast. We really appreciate you giving us your ears for a bit. Please feel free to drop us a note and say hi. And join us next time when the activity continues.
Nailed it.
The Activity Continues is produced by me, Amy, at Collected Sounds Media and is part of the independent Collected Sounds podcast network.
This is just a disclaimer and sort of warning about this podcast. The Activity Continues podcast is in no way affiliated with the Dead Files, its production company, or any of its distributors. We are simply fans that love the show and love to talk about it and dissect it and, yes, make fun of it. But we do love it. And all of the opinions expressed herein are ours alone and have nothing to do with the Dead Files or any of its cast, crew, production, or distributors. And we swear. Enjoy.